The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. And I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Happy St. Patrick's weekend to you. I hope you're all excited for the weekend ahead and a bank holiday and all that. Now, very busy program for you this morning. We'll have a new documentary series called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture, with the first episode featuring Bridget O'Connor, who is a lifelong sheep farmer from Camp. Also, this is the first episode of my journey to become fluent in Irish in a year. We're going to hear the first episode of that now. So I have started the journey to learn Gaeilge. And what a great weekend it is to launch it, because it's Patrick's weekend. It's how we celebrate our Irishness, and it's talked in a Gaeilge as well. So very appropriate, I thought. Now, as part of the platform series, we hear from Forbert na Drumadh Cho and Cumann Taoiseach na Drumadh Cho in Drumadh. And we'll also have our monthly Speaking of Poetry with Bernadette ni Riadha, focusing this month on Robert Frost. Now, I mentioned we have a new documentary series produced by Connie Broderick and I called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture, where we put a spotlight on the women that work in agriculture in this county. And in our first episode, we're going to hear from Bridget O'Connor, who is a lifelong farmer from Camp, where she runs an organic sheep farming system. Now, Bridget breeds 120 Scotch ewes on 54 hectares.
This documentary is a Kishna Communications production, funded by Cumashuna Man with the television licence fee.
I'm Bridget O'Connor. I'm an organic sheep farmer here in the valley of Glaunagalt. And Glaunagalt is a valley west of Camp Village in the Dingle Peninsula.
Bridget O'Connor is a lifelong farmer from Camp, where she runs an organic sheep farming system. Bridget breeds 120 Scotch ewes on 54 hectares.
I suppose for hundreds of years we've had the Scotch breed of sheep here. Lord Vinter brought the Scotch breed back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when he was a landlord here in the peninsula. And we have them here now to the present day. And we had several sheep fairs in Camp at that time. There might have been five in the whole year because there was so much sheep in the peninsula. And we have kept one of them still going in September, the 18th of September, Camp Sheep Fair. And that was on last Monday, and we brought our sheep, and the farmers still honoured the tradition of putting up a pin and having sheep at the fair for sale. And despite the marts, it's still happening. And it's more than just a fair for selling and buying sheep. It's also a place where people meet up. I mean, last Monday we had 92-year-old Patrick Dean, who he said he's going to Camp Fair since he was able to walk. But it's a lovely life. I'm farming all my life, really. I was away in Dublin for a couple of years, all right, and I worked, I suppose, off-farm for 22, 23 years. But I never kept my finger out of the pie, the farming. I was always interested in it and always liked it. And I love sheep.
Bridget's family have been in farming for generations.
My father, my grandfather, great-grandfather, they were all farming here. And when I was a child, we had mixed farming. We had cattle and sheep, and we had everything. We had pigs and you name it. And the cows, that time, you know, you'd be going to the creamery. And we had ridges of potatoes along this field. We had our own crops. You see, the way the farming went in the old days was, it was very sustainable. You sat your potatoes, your mangels, your turnips, your hay, your oats, and you sat them in the spring and you reaped them in the autumn. And that shed over there, it was full of hay come the autumn. And before that, it was a week they used to make with the rushes were awful handy. You see rushes around the place now because I'm organic. I have a few rushes. They'd make a real cap for the week of hay with the rushes. And they would, you see, the difference between today and yesteryear is that we had the metal that time. In this valley now, every farmer here around would come and help us the day the shearing or the day the, whether it was shearing, hay making, whatever, the ploughing. I remember one of my longest memories in my head is my grandfather ploughing this field, belonging with your potatoes. And the day you'd be ploughing, you'd have a couple of neighbours come to help you. They never went down to ploughing with the tractor. And of course now we're getting our veg in from wherever. And sometimes, hopefully, we try to buy local. We're doing our best to buy local. But having said that, I suppose, let's face it, there are people who want to spare money, and they're going to the big shops and the big department stores. Multinationals are buying their produce rather than buying it from the local farmer. And the same applies to organic. I'm organic, certified organic for the last 10 years. It's hard to sell my animals organic because they're a bit dearer. So I finish up often selling them into the conventional system, even though we're making a big effort now to actually get them into the organic chain, because a lot more farmers now have joined the organics because there's more of an incentive to do it. And if effectively we in Kerry now have an organic farming group, Kerry Organics we call ourselves, and we meet occasionally and we have a WhatsApp and we share information. If I'm looking for organic whatever, whether it be mineral blocks or you name it, I'll go on the site and maybe we'll come together and coordinate an approach. So it's a collaboration really of people who are involved in this, and we can collaborate in what we're doing, and that makes life easier. And I see there's an organic hub after being launched now by Pippa Hackett, I think, which is for organics again, where you can put all your animals for sale or whatever if you're looking for something, if you're looking for fodder or you're looking for something, obviously you can put it up on that site. And we also have the certification bodies who offer us the opportunity to sell online as well. But with all of that, it's a growing thing, really, the organics, you know.
And what is the difference between organic sheep farming and conventional sheep farming?
Well, at the moment, an awful lot of people would say, aren't all these hills organic? For sure they are. There's no question about that. But our system of farming is different in that where organic farmers don't use any pesticides or any fertilizers, except you can test your soil, and if you see that there's a need for a certain mineral like lime or something, then you put out lime. But you don't just come and fertilize every couple of months or whatever way it's done like they do in the conventional system or the intensive farming system. And the other thing, we don't give our animals antibiotics. We don't have interventions unless the animal is ill. If an animal is sick, you go to your vet and you give them the antibiotic or whatever they need, and you get a derogation from your vet for that, and you keep your animal then and you don't sell them for 3 months. It's something like 144 days, I think. Whereas in the conventional system, you sell your animal after 1 month after an intervention of an antibiotic or whatever. You'll never leave an animal die. You'll always treat them, but you won't give them, you know, the way the farming system, and I know it because I was, my father and grandfather, we were always pretty organic, I have to say. But at the same time, at certain times of the year, you're bringing the sheep, say, at shearing time, and you give every one of them a dose for whatever, fluke, you name it. That's all stopped. I don't dose them at all, and I use the intervention if they have a particular disease or I see a reason to do it. But I think the organic system is a very good system, because I would question that they need all these chemicals at all in the first place, because I have found it to work very well for my animals. And as I said, that's the difference, really, that the land goes back to nature, and I'm a farmer for nature now. Ambassador, I got that little award last year. There's a Farming for Nature group, and there's a big number of us in it. And again, our aim, I suppose, is to farm for nature as much as possible. Like all along those, that ditch there now, I have Damson plum trees. They're there. They were planted by my great grandfather. They're still here. And they just, every year, you'll have the beautiful fruit of them. Pure organic. They were always organic, but they're more organic now that I'm not using any pesticides or interventions. We've apple trees, and we have our hive of bees now. I started bees there last spring. I have one hive, and I'm going to increase that. But of course, the bees go everywhere, so you can't call it organic honey, even though I'm beginning. Lulu, back here. It's my dog. She's following the crows. Lulu is a sheepdog, a very good sheepdog at that. That's one thing that's the necessary tools of the trade in a sheep farm, is a good sheepdog. Lulu's only 4 years, actually. She's not an old dog at all, but she's of a good breed. I got her from my neighbour over the road, a farmer, Jack Green, gave me that dog about 4 years ago, and she's proven very good, yeah.
So what's involved in training a good sheepdog?
I have to say that I wouldn't be the best at training dogs, I have to say. But what we find is that the dog has the instinct in them. If they're a good breed, it's very easy. Because with that dog now, like when we're bringing down sheep, like she will go around the sheep. And we've done a bit of training now. You put on a lead on her and you leave the lead off. You leave her go and you pull back. Obviously, you pull the lead so she gets used to doing what you tell her then. And there's a bit of work involved in that. As I said, I wouldn't be the best at it, but I think after a while the dog knows what you're thinking.
Yeah, that's the first part of Bridget O'Connor's episode of Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture. We're going to hear the second part after the break.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now let's return to Bridget O'Connor, who is a lifelong sheep farmer from Kemp. Bridget maintains her sheep are very healthy, raised on the organic methods of farming.
Well, I think my sheep are very healthy now. And to be honest, like a lot of people thought, you know, when I became organic first, quite a few farmers were saying to me, well, what will you do? You'll have an awful lot of debts and you'll have serious debts in the flock. But I haven't noticed that. Now, we use minerals. You'll probably see the buckets there now when you go along. We have the organic minerals, and those organic minerals like have garlic in them, which I consider to be very good for the sheep. And particularly the garlic, when it's kind of fly strike time, what we've noticed is we've put out the garlic blocks, and the sheep, they will lick the block, and the garlic comes out through her skin. And these mites and scrotons, as we call them, ticks really, they don't like it. And they will, or even the flies in general, they don't like the garlic and they won't lay on the animal. But I've found that having the mineral blocks and giving them the mineral blocks is very good for them. And you'll have a good mix in the like cobalt and everything, because every farm is probably lacking in something. There's some mineral that maybe isn't there. Because I remember my father, God rest him, he used to always give them cobalt. I remember the red liquid and giving them cobalt when he'd bring them in. And there's cobalt now in all these minerals and that. And the difference then is that you don't have the GMO in it and all that. So any feeding you give them, which I don't feed very much, but in the winter when we'd be very short of grass now, say at certain times of the year, even out in the mountains, you'd get short of grass. And then you would maybe buy in, I'd buy in organic oats, a mix of organic oats, kale and pea together, like, and that's a very good, and it's a very good mix. And I'd buy it from an organic farmer in North Kerry, actually, in my case, because there wouldn't be anybody around here growing the organic oats and hay and stuff like that, but we get them from our Kerry in that. So, I mean, you just go by the total organic principle, really, you know, in looking after the animals and feeding the animals and all that. It's a system that works very well, I think. And then the meat, of course, is totally pure and wholesome and very good for the environment, these blanket bogs, because all these various, all this heathers and different plants that are growing on them, and you see the animals are eating all those plants, those sheep, and it makes for a very sweet meat. I often heard my father saying that the meat of the animals here, like, is very sweet, and I vouch for it myself, to be honest. But they're the bogs that basically, they're not the flat bogs, they're the ones on the mountains, and they're still available for people to cut them into the next century if people want to keep cutting turf. So there's an awful lot, there's everything in a farm, you know, if you use it. I mean, we're very sustainable as farmers if we use everything. Only that, obviously, it's the skills are being lost, maybe to a certain extent. I mean, if you asked people now to set a ridge of potatoes, a lot of people wouldn't know how to start or where to start. So I think my encouragement myself was to the department that any of the time I'm talking to these guys, I'm always saying, like, that in the new schemes, they should introduce one aspect of it that people would set a ridge of potatoes as part of the scheme. Something like that.
An important part of looking after sheep is to shear them of their wool. Wool at one time was lucrative, but not anymore.
My son Liam shore all the sheep this year, and he shore them with the hand shears, which is, I think, is very good, because you leave a tiny little bit of wool and it protects them. It protects them from the sun when there's blazing sunshine, as we had, and it protects them from the cold in when the weather is cold. But that fleece of wool will grow back again and be long down to cover them up for the winter. And of course there's lanolin in the inside of the wool, which protects them from getting wet. You'd often see sheep out in the rain, and you'd be saying, sometimes they wouldn't even go in shelter because they'd be hungry. But what's happening is the wool, the outside of the wool is all wet, but the inside of the wool is protected by the lanolin, and their skin is dry. It's amazing. Absolutely. But the wool is another bone of contention. At the moment, the wool is worth nothing. It's very bad value. And the Irish Wool Council are working on a project at the moment on the use of wool, which I hope will come to some fruition and come to something. Because the wool of those animals, one time, my father, we'd be waiting for the check to go off buying clothes or whatever when we were children. Now, the wool is only a couple of cents a kg. It's terribly, it's not valuable anymore. But there are a number of uses, like it can be used for insulation. It can also be used for, well, maybe rugs or different things, but it also can be used for fertilizer because there's nitrates in the wool. And that's another thing that they're looking at. In the organic system, you could have an organic fertilizer from the nitrates in the wool. And look at all the sheep that are throughout this peninsula, even alone, and all the wool that's now basically going to waste because people aren't even selling their wool at the moment. Last year we used our wool for putting them around the trees. We had a lot of trees, you know, apple trees and that, and if you put the wool around the edge of the down at the bottom of the trunk of the tree, all these nitrates and everything go up into the tree, and you'd have great apples and everything after it. But you can put it around if you want to prevent the weeds coming up. You can circle it. So the wool can be used for various uses, really.
Sheep are fascinating creatures with unique behavioural traits.
That's another thing about sheep. They're a hefted animal. And what that means is that they keep to a certain section of the mountain. For instance, up there at the very top, a sheep might have a lamb every year, and she'd go back to that place again to have the lamb again. And they also have family units. If we have the sheep now going back up to the hill and there's one below the gap or below the gate, she'll be mad to go up to the rest of them, and she'll know her family. because we keep the ewes, the female sheep, for breeding. So you'd have a mother and a grandmother and a daughter, and you'd have a whole family unit of sheep when you do that, you know. So they're very attached to each other, most certainly are. And they know, you know, they know you too, like, and I always feel very guilty when I'm selling the ram lambs every year, and I lure them into the trailer, and I have to do it, but it's something that I'd rather not have to do, because we do get attached to me, you know.
Going forward, Bridget thinks that farming full-time is not really a viable option for young people. When farming today, diversification is key to ensuring a future and maintaining it as a full-time career.
So, I mean, I suppose really, like, as I said, it would be lovely to see more people staying in the land. But with the prices now, the animals and that, the farmer has to have an off-farm job to survive. And in some cases, too, off-farm jobs, husbands and wives. Because while my father could rear the family in the old days here on a sheep farm or a mixed sheep farm or mixed farm, it wouldn't be possible today with the cost of living. The price we're getting for our produce today is I consider it similar enough to what my father was getting back in the 60s and 70s. You know, we're not, unfortunately, farming isn't as lucrative at all as it was in the old days. Definitely, you know, the young people today, then they're removed a bit from the farm because they're not working on the land like they were in the old days. They're not out mowing and ploughing and, you know, as much. But I'm hoping it'll return to that. I think the younger people, it's a great lifestyle. And I think, you know, if the other thing that we're trying to do is diversify into other businesses. Like, we have a walking business going here now. Like, we started up what we call the Shepherd's Walk, where we take people up to the top of the mountain, and they're mostly all Americans or tourists, really. And you tell them the history of the area, the history of farming. So I think farmers are going doing that type of thing. I mean, an awful lot of people are doing B&B. Airbnb has become very popular now, and accommodation. And you could keep the show on the road by diversifying into some extra little business, small enterprise business, and an add-on. And I mean, then we have these wonderful people back west. We have them everywhere in Kerry, I suppose, that are doing their own cheeses, and, you know, that are producing their own vegetables and selling them and all that. And, you know, it's wonderful. Manna now in Silent Tree, my neighbour across the valley, Tom O'Connor and Claire, they have Manna shop inside in town, and they're growing their vegetables and doing as much as they can in their own farm here across the valley from me. That's the kind of thing that we have to kind of, if you like, pursue. I think we have to pursue more of it to keep us here, you know, and get the next generation to do agriculture in college and do it in secondary school. More emphasis on keeping people on the land, because that's the only way to do it, you know.
Yeah, that was the first episode of Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture. And we'll have another episode for you next week. And I want to thank Bridget for contributing there. She did a fantastic job. Now, after the break, we're going to hear the first episode of my new series, Joe Ar Chomhairle Fochta, or Joe in Search of Fluency, where I'm going to be going on a journey to learn the Irish language in a year.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, so are you ready for this? The first episode of Joe Ar Chomhairle Fochta, Joe in Search of Fluency, where I have begun my journey now to learn the Irish language in a year. So sit back, relax and enjoy this. This documentary is a Máiread Ní Bhíonna production. It was funded by Cumasúin na Mban with the television licence fee. Gaeilge is a compulsory part of the school curriculum for primary and secondary school students in Ireland, but once they leave school, the vast majority will rarely speak their native tongue again. I'm Joe McGill, a presenter with Radio Kerry, and I own a brewery in the Gaeltacht region of Iarrachd in South Kerry. My wife Mags and mother Marianne are both fluent, or LIFA, in Irish. Megs would have done all her schooling in Irish, and Mary Ann went to West Kerry Irish boarding school, Cloisteída. Irish was not spoken in my home, and this has been a great regret for me, as like many before me, I finished my schooling with only broken or brished Irish. I'm now determined, going forward, that Irish will be spoken in my house. To do this, however, I need to become fluent myself. And so, I have set myself the challenge to become fluent in Irish in 1 year. As I mentioned, my mother would have gone to Irish boarding school, Cloisteída, in Dingle, and that's where she would have become fluent in Irish. So today, I'm in my mother's house to find out more about how she learnt the language.
I'm Mary Ann McGill, Joe McGill's mum. Mishimara on Nigilla, Mahar, the Joseph McGill.
Mum, tell me, how did you learn Irish? Was it in school? And I know you went to Cloisteída, but were you fluent going, or did you have to learn it over in Dingle, or what way was that?
I would say I got my basic Irish at home, because my father had good Irish. And our grandmother, his grandmother was known as Marnie Hay. So there was an Irish atmosphere always in the house. So I think that's where I got my basic Irish. But having said that, my own primary school, which my teacher was Joan Gallagher, she gave us a great insight into our Irish. And we learned Irish in a very, very easy way. We had this book that was called Peon agus Dúch, Pen and Ink. And you would go through that every day and you would do what you did every day. So in that way you learned the tense, the grammar. And you would say like how you got up in the morning, that was present, what you did yesterday, what you will do tomorrow, and more canelic what you would do. And basically we had to learn Irish, English, maths, history and geography, all in Irish, except English for our Ireland scholarship. Because at that time we all did the Ireland scholarship, which led us to boarding school.
So you got a scholarship for your secondary school then?
Yes.
So things were looked after. So is that because a disadvantaged island or something, is it?
It was for all the islands throughout Ireland.
Okay. I didn't realise my grandfather, Conline, was that good at Irish. So that's interesting. So it's in the family kind of going back. So Cloisteída then, was that a big change for you? Because, like, English would have been spoken in your house. So was it a big change then going over to boarding school and having to, I'd imagine, speak Irish all the time?
It was a big change, but having said that, when we went there, we had a good standard of Irish. But what I found very hard when I went to Cloisteída first, sitting for your table, your breaks and your meals, you were sat with a girl from the Gaeltacht. And I remember my first couple of days there, I felt I was in Spain or something. I could hardly understand what she was saying because she had the bloss. She was from the Gaeltacht and she had a bloss and everything, they pronounced their chevaux, ach, ach, no, and there was that kind of a thing. So we never grasped that for ages. But in the meantime, by Christmas, we were all fluent.
What was it called? The Gaeltacht, or what was that called? The people that weren't from the Gaeltacht?
The Gaeltacht.
All right.
We were from the Gaeltacht.
Was that like a derogatory term? Was it going to be put down term? What was it?
Well, it was that there wasn't fluent Irish speakers in the island, I suppose, really. Even though I think going back, as I said, my father's grandmother was called Marnie Hay. They would have a lot of Irish. But as well as that, I think the Lyons, which is my surname, originally came from Ballinskellig, which was a Gaeltacht area. So I'm sure they brought some Irish to the household, really.
So then, coming forward to our house, we didn't speak Irish in our house. And like the only time I'd ever hear you speaking Irish really was if we met a man called Michael Augustine, because he just seemed to, he was obviously fluent in Irish. But I remember as a child going, jeepers, and you'd start speaking away in Irish. So you wouldn't get the opportunity much, would you, when you came back then? Like
very, very little opportunity. There was very, very few people that would speak Irish to you. But I used to look forward to the day I would meet Michael Augustine, and he was a cousin of my mother's, and we would have a great conversation. But other than that, I can't say that I met too many more that you would have a conversation in Irish with.
Mm. And then why didn't we speak Irish at home then?
The reason you didn't speak Irish at home, I felt when I came back from Cloisteída that my Irish, even though I loved Irish, was a hindrance to me. Because I would be more confident speaking Irish than what I would have been speaking English at the time. So really, I think I made up my mind. I was going to be there for you, for your Irish. You were going to learn Irish in your own way, and you had a choice. I am proud to say that all of you did well in your Irish exams, but I always kept a, would say, I suppose, kept an eye on you when it came to Irish.
Well, that, right, you also sent, I went anyway, to Joseph Lynch's Irish College in Valencia, which I found brilliant, and it was a real help. He used to put on an Irish college himself, which was absolutely fantastic, in Skuldrach at the National School in Valencia. But you said that we did well in our exams, yet I'm not fluent in Irish. So is that a problem with the way Irish is being taught? And we haven't even mentioned Peg yet, because I'd imagine Peg was around your time, was she?
So, I had Peg.
What do you mean, Mara Hyde?
No, Peg. I had Peg for my Leaving Cert.
Yeah.
But and we learned a lot of Corrie-Kindes from Peg, really. But possibly, I think things has changed. Like when I was going to school, as I say, we had an Irish Koran school, which helped us to speak Irish. I don't think that was there near you. I think you have to speak the language to pick it up. I see Molly, my grandchild now, and I say to her, the Doris, she knows where the door is. Things like that, little things like that, like a couple of fuckle every day will bring you.
Right, so you have to help me here now, because I'm trying to become fluent in a year. So you can kind of ask Gaelga. Ma van Kayla, Megs, my wife, can speak Askielga. So when we're coming to the house now, should we try and speak Irish? Are you up for it?
I'm quite up for it, but you shouldn't make an issue of it.
What does that mean?
That you don't say, oh God, I have to speak Irish now.
Right.
You speak it in a kind of a natural way.
Yeah.
I could say to you...
Well, you still have to make an effort, like.
Well, you can make it easily. I could say to Joseph, Tara Mac and Doris... Get out the door.
Yeah. Right, you'd never say that to me.
Well, no, I'd say fall to Rosa Stock when you come in. That's, you have six words learned there already.
Yeah.
And I think, as I say, going back to my own way that I learned Irish, is what you do every day.
Mm.
What you did today, you got up in the morning, we used to say, we said our prayers. I hope that's still in your household. And you combed your hair, you washed your teeth or whatever, you came downstairs, you put your lunch in your bag, you ate your breakfast and you went to school. Now, how many sentences have you on that?
Yeah.
If I do that, if I learnt that, what I do every day in Irish, do you, put it in past tense, put it if you won't or what I will do, there's your Irish, you have no problem.
So we're going to count as Gaelga.
Count as Gaelga,
right.
Ashomach.
Right. Well, we'll rid of me. And tea? Or that?
Rinna me and tea.
Yeah.
Danig me and tea. I will make the tea.
Right.
Rinna.
You can't be a Montour now with me.
Yeah, I won't be a Montour.
Gormagas.
Falter Othi, Joseph.
Victor Boyda is Irish Language Planning Officer in the South Kerry Gaeltacht of Ivrahag.
Victor Boyda, I'm the Language Planning Officer with the Cochuiste in South Kerry for the South Kerry Gaeltacht.
So what advice would you have for me now? Am I out of my head to think I could become fluent or hold a conversation within a year? What do you think I need to do?
Absolutely, absolutely possible, and even faster than in a year, I'd say. If you have people around...
Don't be putting that pressure on me.
I know. But if you have people around you, you have some time, you're in South Kerry,
yes.
So you know, you have a long list of people around you, I'd say, who you can speak Irish to. But the important is the decision. You just have to have a conversation with that person and sit down and say, do you know what, this is what I want in a year, I want to be fluent. And I would really appreciate if we could just switch all our conversation into Irish. And if you feel that I'm struggling... Don't give up. Keep speaking Irish. Don't speak English to me, and I'll just get through. It will be difficult first, but I'll get through. This is how you learn. You get, like, one of the things that why people say children are sponges. They're not sponges. They just don't have another. There's no way out for them. They have to pick up the language that's around them. So this thing is, it's acknowledged in special, like in literature on language acquisition, as it's called, that the most important thing why children acquire a language is. Need is because they need to acquire it. And the second language, why it is more difficult to acquire a second language or a third, because there's no need. It's not, you know, the first language has already been learned. I'm fine. Why should I learn a second language? So you have to put yourself in a situation of need. That's why when you go to France, where nobody will speak English to you, that works. But in Ireland, it's very difficult. So you really have to create that situation.
To begin my journey, I'm going to be looking at all the different ways that you can learn Irish. Now, that could be a book. It could be like the cassettes or CDs or whatever they are now. It could be looking at the online methods that are out there now. And there's a lot of social media people out there. The conversations, going to pop-up Gaeltachts, all these different options. But it sounds like from what you're saying, the most important part is to be speaking it and listening to it.
Yeah, listening helps to pick up the phrase and the words and the language that you need, and speaking allows you to organise all that information in your head and to be able to... It's like if you're looking for resources on the internet, for example, because this is just great what you have now. You've got the radio, you've got the television, and you can look back, you can watch programs again and again. Some have subtitles. Very importantly, there are a lot of resources for parents who would like to speak Irish to their children, a huge amount of them. And you can find links to all these on our website, www.briur.ie, under the section Learn or for parents. For parents, you'll find their information about and links to stuff that you could use if you're using Irish at home. Under Learn, you'll find links to different resources that will bring you to resources on the internet that you could use if you're learning the language.
Well, brilliant. In Gheom Bliana, hopefully, we'll be speaking fluently, Oscailge and No Berla, hopefully. So that's the aim. But Victor, for now, Gormagot. I'm excited. Tosh get a meany arm now. I'm looking forward to undertaking this wonderful journey. Peter Shallow, who lives in Carsevine, was where I was a few years ago. He would have had an understanding of the Irish language, but wasn't fluent. So set out on a journey to become fluent. So today I'm at his house to find out how he did this.
Come and start too, Peter.
Gomag is too fine.
That's the extent of it now, Peter. Hopefully, in a year's time, I'll be able to speak a bit better. Thanks a million for...
I was not fluent in Irish, just like many Irish people, which is awful to say, really. But I went back to study to become a primary school teacher recently. And obviously, when you're a primary teacher, you need to have the language. So I went back and studied and joined a Kirkle Corrah, and I read a few books and I listened to the radio, and you know, that's how it started.
And was it for like professional reasons so, or had you always kind of a love of the language? Is it something that you wanted to become fluent at when you were younger, or when did that kind of come
out? Actually, I always did love languages, would you believe? Sadly though, you know, someone told me once, you know, you could want to learn Irish again or want to learn a language, but unless there's a need for it, you're not going to do it, you know. So I'm delighted that I became a teacher, because I needed to do it, you know. I needed to learn the language to teach the kids. But now, since then, I want to do it. I love it.
So you've actually really embraced it since, because, you know, I've heard you that you're going to Cork Corrals and things like that, and you've kind of, I suppose, you're trying to bring it into your everyday life as well. So for me now, right, I have a year to do this, right? Do you think it's achievable, first of all? And how would you go about it if you were me?
It depends how fluent you think you'll be in a year, I suppose. But it's very achievable. You just need to get stuck in, really. Some of the best advice I heard was listen to a podcast or someone talking and replay that same podcast over and over again, because you will get the ear for it. You'll pick up another word or another sentence. You can start writing it down. That was one of the good tips I learned from Victor Boyja, if you know him, from Ballinskellig's.
Yeah. And I've met Victor, and he gave me a similar advice, which I think, yeah, that's interesting enough. The Corca Corral, I don't know what I have the confidence to go to one of those. Like, so was it difficult for you at the start, or were you like, or I'll just take a risk, or did you have to warm into it, or how did that work?
Yeah, good question. It actually was difficult, because look, there's people there with a very good level of Irish. They were doing most of the talking, I was doing most of the listening. But as Victor would have told me as well, listening is as good as speaking, because if you're listening to the language, look, the speaking will come. So yes, I would encourage you immediately to get onto the one. There's an Iha Craw every Monday, usually for the people in Ballinskellig's, but it's spread all over now, South Kerry and even Mid Kerry. And there's a meetup then in the library in town. There's one in, I think there's one in Waterville as well. There's a few around, but I would definitely, you have to meet people, you have to speak the language. And if you can't speak it, don't worry, you can be listening.
Yeah. And then, was there any other resources? You're a young man, like, were you on social media looking for anything? Like, there's a lot of different ways to learn the language. Or was it books? You mentioned podcasts. What else can I do in that line?
Yeah, well, look, I would recommend you read kids' books. So the very first kids' books, they might have a picture of a duck and it might say lacha. One word, two or three words. You get nouns, you'll get verbs, you get everything in between. So I would literally start, if you have access to books, start with them. If you really want to do a bit more formal learning, so the best book I can recommend is a book called Gaeilge Stro, and it was written by a man called Eamon O'Donnell. But there's a beginner's level, start with that one. There's a lower intermediate level. There's a grammar book, which is very scary. I haven't actually opened that one up yet. But yeah, Gaeilge Stro.
Well, Peter, you're onto something, because I ordered that book and it arrived in the post only a few days ago. So I went for intermediate level. I don't know, was that a bit ambitious? Or because I'm thinking, I've learned it in school. Surely I know the basics, you know, or am I gone too advanced? I've opened the first few pages and I find it fine so far. Do I?
Yeah, no, look here. Look, to be honest, there isn't much difference between the beginner and intermediate. I better start at the very beginning here. But as I said, there's not much difference in them, just more kind of phrases and whatnot in them. So you'll be fine, I'm sure.
What has your attitude to the Irish language changed from your school days to now?
Absolutely. Gacinta. I lived abroad for a year in Italy. And my Italian was better than my Irish. I hadn't spoken in ages. It's only when you live abroad you kind of get a bit, you know, geez, what is my nationality? Do you know, oh, you know, Ireland, they, you know, there's a lot of stereotypes with Irish people. But what if I could change anything but Ireland, I'd have more support to speak Irish more. It's just such a beautiful language. It's part of our culture. So, look, I am absolutely delighted that I am back speaking Irish.
So, look, Peter, I have food for thought now. I'm going to go away. I have got the right book anyway, it seems. Yeah. And I'm going to go away and see. And I better start Caint as Gaeilge now. Gurb Mahagut, Peter.
Tá fáil to rot.
Yeah, so just coming away from Peter's house there. It's interesting that he was saying, you know, to get the children's Irish books. So that's interesting as well. So I'd hope that I would have, that I'd be able to read that no problem, but then there's probably certain words you'd pick up that would help as well. It's interesting that I got the intermediate book. Maybe I'm running before I can jog. But again, I read the first few pages of Gaeilge Gan Stro, and it seems it's done very well, so hopefully that'll be fine as well. The great thing about that book is that you can actually download audio. So again, because I'm in the van right now, I can listen to it. So that's going to be brilliant. And I spend a lot of my time, like I said, in the van, so I have to make use of that time as well. That's an interesting thing again. And Victor Boyda was saying that about, you know, the podcast, and play that over and over and over and over and over again. But then I'd imagine as well, I'm just thinking practically, I probably need a dictionary next to me then for certain words. Or maybe I come home and I say to Max, what does that mean? And then, you know, once you know. So that'll be interesting as well, just to hear from that point of view. So the other thing, I suppose, I never asked him is what podcasts Os Gaeilge he'd recommend. And that's something I'll have to start looking at. And the other interesting thing he said is they can just listen at a Kirkle Corral. I don't even know, am I saying that right? But so that's interesting as well. But anyway, it's good to meet someone that I suppose was on my journey a few years ago, and you know, can be done. So I'm excited. Tosh, get me in the earth.
Yeah, that's the first episode of a Joe Erhor Leofuta, Joe in Search of Fluency, and we're going to have an episode every month all the way over this year that I have ahead of me to learn the Irish language. So wish me the best of luck. Like I said, Tobbe Alidar Vishuk, August Tashketamini, or Impression. Now, we're going to take a break with a more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Fexco story, €34 billion in transactions in 29 countries with 2,500 employees, 1,000 of them in Clonglin. That'll be on Radio Kerry on Monday, March 18th. The Fexco story is told by Frank Lewis, guided by Fexco chairman Dennis McCarthy. And like I said, it's on Radio Kerry Monday morning from 9 to 11. Part of the platform series on Radio Kerry, funded by Cumashuna Man with the television licence fee, we're going to hear from Forbert and Drumada Cho and Cumann Tahirta na Drumada Cho in Drumad. They have an important story to tell in terms of community development, social inclusion, the provision of cradle-to-grave services, provision of assistance to the elderly living in the community to help them continue to live independently in a rural area while still feeling included and involved.
My name is Imrani Varaku and I am Bainisteoir Manager of Forbert na Drumada and Cumann Tahiachta na Drumada too.
Imre, thanks a million for welcoming me here. Really looking forward to the tour around this place as well, because there's so many different aspects to it. So I suppose firstly, describe what goes on here, and that might have to be a big description.
Well, it probably will be a big description, Joe, I suppose. The thing about Forbert na Drumada and Cumann Tahiachta na Drumada is that a lot of people, I suppose, don't realise the amount of services that we have available here in a location such as ours that a lot of people kind of think is relatively remote. But I suppose for ourselves, or from my perspective, I always feel that we're really only 30 minutes to Killorglan across Ballachasheen. So in many ways, that makes us very central. You know, I suppose we're probably 10 minutes from Waterville, 10 to 15 minutes from Carsevine, depending on who's driving. And I suppose, you know, we are to that end then, even though it may seem that Drumad is relatively remote, you know, I like to think that we are sort of more in the centre of everywhere, as opposed to taking the title of remote. So Forbert na Drumada Cho is an enterprise. It's a social enterprise that was really built, I suppose, by a community for the community and the hinterland that's around it. So I suppose the idea of Forbert na Drumada is that it's a social enterprise, and then Cumann Tahiachta na Drumada is the charitable entity of that. So under Cumann Tahiachta na Drumada, what we have is a creche, then we have our Nealan, then we have a Nian Rolan Gaelach, and we also have after school services which support the school next door and other lots of parents from Foyle Moor, Waterville, Carsevine travel to this area as well for childcare purposes. On the other end of it then, I suppose that's why we look at it like cradle to grave services. We have the services for the elderly, which are wonderful services, especially in a rural area, because I suppose you have a lot of people who would live out, we'll say, maybe a couple of miles from their neighbours. And it's great to see that a service like Local Link Kerry can join in with the likes of ourselves and bring people into our centre here. They have great entertainment. They may have bingo. They might have exercises. Lots of different elements of entertainment, I suppose, for themselves, a lovely meal, and then again they get to chat with their friends and meet different people and are again taken, collected by Local Link and brought home. So I suppose those services are very important in an area such as ours.
They're the services, and I know there's a few more as well, but the facilities here are second to none. This really is the heartbeat of this whole community, isn't it, here?
Again, we like to think so, Joe. I suppose, you know, the committee that came together years and years ago, I suppose they had great foresight in many ways. Like, this was a greenfield site once upon a time. Now it's home to a large community hall. We have a hostel where we're welcoming guests from all over the world. We have three enterprise units, one of which is now transformed into a GTEC Digi Hub, where we have 9 remote working spaces. And we also have the Nienera building, we have the childcare building itself, we have 6 houses for the elderly, and we also have a daycare centre, as I say, for the provision of the services to the elderly, plus a laundry as well. So I suppose it's a very rare sight to go to somewhere and find all of those services in the one campus per se. For ourselves, the houses are a very important element as well. Those houses are built specifically, the idea is that they're for over 55s, I suppose that's sort of the limit that's on it, but you know, we can examine different cases. Those houses are very important because, again, going back to the peripheral, I suppose, location we're in and the idea of the rural area that's around us, say if a person's partner or their husband or wife passes away, they can't drive, they're living on their own, they're not very happy about it. Those people who, you know, are in that situation can approach us and say, do you have an available house? Can we come and can we live here? So I suppose it's lovely. The idea of your community all around you, you know, there's always people coming and going and passing by. We have people who moved home from the UK and are located located here also. They were originally from the area and were able to locate back here because of the services that are here. So it's really, it's a wonderful thing to be able to offer a community.
Recently, you were involved in an amazing initiative that I think will be very beneficial for this whole area, and that's helping people, I suppose, with cancer and their treatment and their recovery. So explain that to us, what you did there.
So I suppose, Joe, so many families in this area and obviously all over Kerry are affected by cancer. And even though the Kerry Cork Cancer Bus Link is an amazing service, we're still, as I say, in Drummond, a half an hour at least drive. But if you're located in Valentia, Port Magee or in other areas, it's another bit of a distance. So earlier in the year, as earlier in 2023, I had spotted that CLOR, the Department of Rural and Community Affairs, were administering their programme CLOR, Measure 2. And under that was a cancer care car. And I applied for it, to be honest, really not thinking that anything would come of it. And we were delighted to find out that we were allocated €39,510 to purchase a car. So with the help of Kelleher's Garage in Tralee, we obviously had to tender for the car. The Kelleher's Garage have been absolutely wonderful. And Akeem and Tim Kelleher have been so helpful to us in everything, I suppose. We had to get the car converted. So the front seat has a swivel seat. And it basically, anyone that has any mobility issues, they can, you know, just pop into the seat and swivel around. So the idea is that it will meet the bus if needs be for somebody that doesn't have family members, or else if the situation I suppose is needed, they will be transported directly to Cork for their cancer care treatment. So I suppose we all know that many people, they might be able to drive themselves to Killorgan to meet the bus, but when they're coming home, you know, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, radium, all those treatments are very, very harsh. And this gives people the opportunity to be driven door to door. And the great thing about it is, again, it shows the amazing community spirit. We have a list of drivers, people that have volunteered, just rang me up and said, Eimear, look, if you need somebody to drive of a day or a couple of days, or I'm available a day a month, then just give me a shout and we will. So the insurance policy, we're just in the, I suppose, finishing stages of negotiations with the insurance company about open driving. And that's the idea, that we'll say, if you were able to say to me, I know somebody, I'd like to carry them to Cork, but there's no cost impact on you, no cost impact on the patient. And we had a fundraiser here a couple of weeks ago, a Boston Tea Party, and it was just unbelievable, the amount of support it got, the atmosphere that was there, because everybody really said the same thing. This car, it's good to have it, bad to want it, you know. So they were all so very happy to give and donate towards the car. But I suppose the idea is that, you know, everyone kind of with their fingers crossed saying, please God, we'll never need the service, but it's amazing to know that it's there. So that car will be back. It was here for the night of the fundraiser. It's getting its logos, it's getting all painted up at the moment, and it will be down to us. Kelleher's are going to deliver it down to us in the next week or so. So we are delighted to be able to offer that service to the community.
This area has a lot going for it. We're in the Gaeltacht as well, and that's important to mention. It's in the middle of the Dark Sky Reserve, but I think the most amazing thing about this place, and you get it in a lot of rural places around Kerry, but there's something unique here, I think, about the community aspect. They're unbelievable when it comes to organising anything or getting involved in anything. They're like, even if it's the ICA women or whatever, the football club over the road here, the GA club over the road here. You're a local woman, you're from here, born and bred. It must be an extremely fulfilling job to be, you know, working here.
It is indeed, Joe. Yeah, we're part of Gaeltacht Thaobh Róg. I suppose one of the things about Gaeltacht Thaobh Róg is how scapa amach it is, how scattered from, I suppose, you know, you're in Drummond, you're in the heart of the Gaeltacht, you go as far as Mareach and Waterville, then you're out of the Gaeltacht after Mareach, you go back into it around Lohar. So, as I say, it's scapa. And we have our own challenges, but again, promotion of the language and, you know, Cuirconquín na Gaeilge, being able to offer services to Gaeilge is wonderful to be able to do also. And you mentioned the ICA, and you know, I'm delighted you did, because I suppose, you know, in the last couple of days, somebody very important in our community has passed away. Helen O'Sullivan from Drumrock. She was a fantastic lady. She worked so hard in a voluntary capacity. She got the ICA up and running herself along with her committee. She really committed to lots and lots of work, hard work and really good services in this area. They organised a Christmas party every Christmas. I'd say people were looking forward to it from 1 December to the next. They were involved in school matters. as, you know, getting books and all sorts of stuff to kids for school. And, you know, she did great work. So I'd just like to, I suppose, pay a tribute to Helen, and, you know, our community will not be the better for her loss, you know. But again, and we'd like to pass our condolences on to all of her family. Also the GAA are fantastic in our area. Again, we deal with rural decline, you know, population decline in an area like ours is a massive issue. We'd like to see more and more people coming back, but our football club has gone through, I suppose, peaks and troughs over the years, all the way back, and there have been stalwarts all the way down through those years who have stood the test of time with Drummond Pierce's, and again are a fantastic representation of what it means to be a community, to never give up and to keep on plugging away for the local area that you're in.
And you mentioned rural decline there, and people are fighting back, I suppose, on that front. It's great to see, you know, young people moving back into the place, and a way they're doing that is through remote working. So you're going to bring me to a certain place now. So where are we going next?
Okay, so we're going to take a trip up to the GTEC. The GTEC, actually, we're very grateful to lots of the government organisations we work with. Uthrós na Gaeltachta is our main funder. They are, again, it's, I suppose, one of the benefits we have here in the Gaeltachta, that we get fantastic support from Uthrós na Gaeltachta, along with Kerry County Council, the HSE and several other organisations, South Kerry Development Partnership. The GTEC is an initiative that was done just around the time of COVID, when remote working became a huge thing, and there are 9 remote working spaces up there, and I'm going to introduce you to Bernard. Bernard is one of the people who are based here long term. He's Bernard Carey, originally from Waterville, had lived in Sofia at the beginning of the pandemic and decided that they wanted to move home, himself and his wife and 2 children, and have came home, and we are delighted to have him here as a tenant. And he works for a company called Atos Limited, and I'll let him tell you a little bit more about that.
So the company I work for, Joe, is called Atos, A-T-O-S. It's a French multinational IT services provider. They're very big, so they turn over about 11 billion euro each year. They have 105,000 employees in 72 countries. I've been working with them now for 20 years this month, actually. And the role I have is I head up one of their major business lines in the GO UK and Ireland. So I head up all of the business in the market, providing services into multiple customers in different markets, health sector, manufacturing, utilities, you name it.
Isn't it amazing the world we live in that you can do that from rural Drummond?
It really is, yeah. That's the advancement of technology. So, you know, if we cast our mind back to really the pandemic, up until that point, many people were actually working in the office. Remote working was beginning to creep in, so it's not a new thing. But the pandemic accelerated it massively, and companies had to just really adapt and react very quickly. And what a lot of people thought would be impossible back then turned out to be actually very possible. And, you know, when you're doing a job that is location agnostic, let's say, you're in a leadership position or a typical white collar position like finance or human resources, we have found that with the likes of video conferencing and, you know, instant messaging and collaborative tools, especially from in the Microsoft space and other providers, you can really work from anywhere once you have a good internet connection. So, I've found that with the GTEC office here in Drummond, it had everything that I needed. So I've got a really nice office space. As you can see, it's enclosed in glass, which means that although you can hear me at times, I'm called with a deep voice, it is still private. And I feel quite productive over here. I've actually done a few different roles since I came here in May 2022. At one point, I was leading teams. It's very unfair on the kids for me to be trying to stay quiet. You know, daddy's on conference calls. So I've decided to just move out. And it also forces you to put on good clothes. Sometimes you can get lazy around the house, right?
Put on a pants.
Yeah, exactly. Put on a pants and a shirt. So it works really, really well. The internet connection here is really, really solid. So it's very reliable. It's a good strength internet connection, yeah.
And the commute is pretty nice as well. You're not stuck in traffic.
No, absolutely. So, I mean, we were talking before we started recording here, but there was a second reason for me doing it, and that is that it's about 13 kilometers from my house, I'm almost 50 now, so I just really wanted to bring some health fitness back into my life, and I started cycling over the mountain from my house down here to Drummond, and it was transformational, absolutely brilliant, you know, mentally, physically, just started feeling a whole lot better about myself, because, you know, I'm tied to the chair, I can be on conference calls for 6-7 hours in a day, and then you're working around those conference calls, so I can have quite long days, and it's not uncommon for me to be on calls constantly for an entire day.
And that's important. You know, you've mentioned a kind of few different aspects there. You mentioned your 3-year-old, you mentioned the health side of it, and working in a very high profile business as well, and a kind of a high power job. You can do all that from the likes of here, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, loads of people coming in and out now, right? Emer Shea runs the place here locally. She does a fantastic job, very personable, forward looking type of person, manages all the facilities, and it's I'm beginning to see familiar faces. They come and go. People even coming down on holidays here, you know, maybe their kids are on holidays, they have to work, and they'll just come over and they'll use the G-Tech while their family is possibly down at the beach or enjoying the Easter break, you know, but they still have to work. So it's a fantastic facility. And what you have to now remember as an employer is that everybody's asking for hybrid working. So it's not even something that you have a choice on anymore. You know, it's certain industries, okay, if you're working in manufacturing, you have to be in the plant, right? You're on a production line. If you're a nurse in a hospital, you have to be there. But a huge amount of work nowadays can be location agnostic, especially in the corporate world. And talent, the best talent, want to be able to work from anywhere. And you have to be willing to be flexible for them. So if somebody was going to tell me tomorrow, hey, Bernard, we've got a new role for you, but you need to be in the office 5 days a week, I'd be looking at them going, are you mad?
Well, I know you've a load of conference calls today, so I better let you get back at it. But thanks a million for taking time out and talking to me.
Good talking to you, Joe. Good to see you.
We'll take a break and we'll return to Drummond after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now let's return to Drummond, to Forbert na Drummond Cho, and Cumann to Hirta na Drummond Cho. And I was lucky, I went along with Emer Murphy and we called into the daycare centre. And I met a few very interesting people inside there. I actually interrupted them because they were at their exercises.
I'm Noreen Moran from Murrayuk.
And Noreen, tell us, what were you doing here today when I came in the door?
What were we doing? We were doing Keep Fit Today with Mary Coffey. Mary comes about every 4 weeks and it keeps our mobility going. There's nobody under 60 here, you see.
Oh, go away, there is, surely. Are you cutting me down?
There is one lady in her 90s and another lady is 95. I'm only 89, of course.
You're only a young one in here, so.
The rest are younger. But Mary's marvellous. We do exercises to music. I mean, I do exercises every day at home, but no good, I don't have music, you see. But anyway, we will have lunch after this now. Next week, Father Shukru will say Mass for us because it will be Holy Thursday. We can't have Mass on Holy Thursday. There's special devotions on, as you know.
Yes.
And that's next Thursday. I don't know whether we'll hear Holy Thursday now. We probably will be and have Easter Lamb, you see.
Yeah.
I look forward to this day from Friday to the following Thursday. It keeps me going. And I love meeting all the neighbours. Bus calls to the door for us. We have a helper to help us on the bus and off the bus. It looks as if we are the responsibility from the time the bus comes until they put us in home again. A marvellous facility.
Yeah.
And we have bingo. June does bingo with us another day. What else do we have? A hairdresser comes, of course, and we avail of that. The nurse, what?
A chiropodist.
A chiropodist as well. And I don't drive. There was a time I drove here to the chiropodist. Now I don't drive anymore. And she calls to the house as part of the service. She calls to me around 12 o'clock. She'll get finished here and she'll call to me on her way home.
Where else would you get that?
Nowhere but in South Kerry.
What's your own name?
My name's Tim.
Tim, and where are you from, Tim?
Breehig is where I'm living now. I came from South Africa. I've been living in Breehig for 2 years now. And I have a dog and a daughter.
Yeah, I think I know your daughter. She's a famous artist,
isn't
she?
That's right. That's correct. Yes. How do you know her?
I was in your house, would you believe?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
And wonderful artwork and everything. Absolutely
amazing.
Yes, she's
very good. She's very good.
And what do you make of a place like this? How does it help?
How does it help? I think it keeps your sanity and keeps you fit.
Yes.
And I think that's the important thing in life, is to continue to use your limbs and your brain. And this is what this organization does. It teaches you to keep fit mentally and physically. I think that's very important.
Excellent. Thanks a million for talking to me.
Thank you.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Tell us your name and where you're from.
I'm from Ochotobert, Carsevein. My name is Mary Wharton.
And I won't ask you what age you are, but you're one of the more experienced people here.
I am, yes.
55,
next birthday.
I am. I wish I was, but I was ever. I enjoy good health.
Yeah, and tell us, you're a student as well. You're a scholar, and was that last year that you qualified again in something else? What did you do?
No, we had chosen in the Tech American in Waterville.
Yeah.
It was run by the Kelly County Council.
Yeah.
So I was the oldest, and there was a little boy from over the water. I think he's Killian McGillicuddy. He was the youngest.
Whoa.
So we had a wonderful time there.
And how do you find this place? You're very active in everything. So how do you find this place?
Marvellous. Mm. We look forward to coming over every Thursday.
Yeah.
We really do, and we have a lovely time here. Mm-hmm. And we're treated very well. And we have a lovely lunch here. And we have different exercises, different things every Thursday. And probably we have Mass next Thursday. Father Shukla will probably say it for us.
Yeah.
So we really look forward to it, Nita. We live from week to week to come here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And you've many good friends here?
Marvellous friends down the years, yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'll leave you get back to it and get exercising again.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
You're putting me to shame here. I'm feeling a bit that I should be doing more in my exercises, but thanks for talking to me.
You have to. Thank you very much.
Andy O'Connell from Kilcormac.
Andy, what's it like coming here on a weekly?
Lovely, okay. Beautiful,
yeah.
Lovely to the great break,
yeah.
From the middle of the week from farming.
Yeah.
And it is very, very nice.
Yeah.
Lovely, it is very handy, like, you know, don't you know? Only we need more music.
More music, yeah.
Music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you dance?
No,
you just like to listen to it, so.
They listen to the music, and
I'd say you have a few good partners here as well. I know your wife is over there, but I'm just.
Yes,
like,
that's right. I know. Very good.
What's your favourite part of it? Is meeting the people?
Meeting people and having a chat.
Yeah.
About back and forward and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it just strikes me, this, you know, isn't it amazing to have a facility like this, you know?
It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant, especially way out here in the mountain. Yeah.
Where do you say you're originally from?
Yeah, originally from Glenbeug.
Okay.
And there's Glenbeug in Camdenny, but there's Glenbeug in Drumwood.
Right.
And the one on Drumwood, I mean.
Okay.
That's the one I was I went to Castleman School.
Yeah.
Across the mountain. And across two mountains to go to Mass.
Jeez.
2 months ago to Mass.
Yeah.
Barefooted.
Yeah. It's amazing.
In the 50s. Yes, it is.
Different times.
I'm Mary Coffey from Waterville.
And Mary, what were you doing when I rudely interrupted you there this morning?
Well, I work out at Carsevein Social Services, and I come around to groups and we do little bits of exercise, so we have music in the background, so we have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they don't feel like they're doing exercises, really.
Yeah.
She don't?
No, we don't.
communities like ours. They come, they do such super work every day. We've about 3 acres of grounds here that need to be kept and maintained. Inside, as I say, the hostel, the community centre, which multi-purposes as an arts venue, a class venue, it has score, every kind of a thing going for it. So we can be lots of things for this community and its hinterland, but as I say, without the people that work in it and the committee of, again, I can't forget the board of directors, we've 9 volunteers, and volunteering is something that possibly is dying out a little bit in Kerry, but I'm happy to say that it's very much alive in Drummond, and we're very, very thankful to them all.
Very good. So, to the future, Tauki Gal, bright future ahead. As we say that, we can see the kids from the Nienra are outside the window here. For them, for their sakes, a very bright future ahead.
That's what we hope, Joe. Tauki Gal and on Doiv on Gangathoi Tachtashtach. There's Fahadocha, 22 of them coming in now to play in the Halla. And again, we are so lucky with the people that we have working in the Nienra, the childcare. They give such a service. It's the reason that parents entrust their children to them every single day, because we have such wonderful people who love those kids like they're their own and hand them back in the evening time when the day is done.
Yeah, excellent. So this whole enterprise and community initiative, I suppose, will continue. You'll strive to continue to serve the community long into the future.
That's what we'd like, Joe. You know, all we want to see is Dul Chun Cinn progress in this community and across South Kerry, in the Gaeltacht and outside. We are all one, and all we want to do is see this community grow and strengthen, and lots of those young people living here in the future when I'm old and grey.
Garmaga.
Fáilte rud, Carmila Maga, Joe.
Yeah, thanks to Emer Murphy and everyone at Forbert na Drumada Cho and Cumann Ta Hiachta na Drumada Cho. What a great story that is. And it's part of the Platform series on Radio Kerry, funded by Commissioner Man with the television licence fee. Bernadette, how are you this morning?
I suppose not too bad. Not too bad. That's always a safe answer.
I was getting worried there the way you. I was getting worried there, but at the big pause.
Yeah, I had to think. Like, you know, am I all right? I am. But not too bad. I suppose. Look,
I like
everyone.
Bernadette.
I'm waiting for some nice spring weather, if ever we're going to get a spring. But
yeah, I like that, Bernadette. Okay. You think about it. Some people just go, "Are a grand," and the world could be falling on top of them. So, Bernadette, you always bring a poet with you. So, who have you gone for this month?
So, this month I thought we'd talk a bit about Robert Frost.
Mm.
Fairly well known, you know, way back, but still, I mean, his poetry pops up in curriculums and various things. But, and just to give a sketch in his early life and his childhood. So, he was born in 1874, in March 1874, so he was born, I reckon, now 150 years ago this month.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. So he was born in California, and he passed away in 1963, so he was in his late 80s when he passed away. So he had a little bit of moving around when he was a young child. His father was a journalist, and I think the father was trying to, I don't know, to establish or expand his career as a journalist, and he moved the family to California, and that was a year before Robert Frost was born. And then, sadly, when Robert was only 11, his father died from TB, and so they were on the move again because his mother moved herself and the two children back to Massachusetts, and they went to live with the children's paternal grandparents, and she taught at a variety of schools, but obviously she was trying to support herself and the children. So Robert was bright, according to all accounts, and he graduated with high marks, very, I think, the highest in his year, and that was in 1892. But to get back to, you know, his poetry, I mean, anyone reading his poetry will see that there's a very definite kind of rural thread running through it, and he uses all the, what do you call it, the elements of nature, I suppose, Joe, like the trees, the woods, the snow, and he goes on in other poems like Fire and Ice and all that. And he also, he kind of connects it with ordinary people and ordinary lives. And I think that the country and the rural places, I think they were in his psyche, and he connected very much to nature.
Mm.
And with that in mind, I thought, you know, I might read two very short poems of his. One of them is called Nothing Gold Can Stay. Nature's first green is gold. Her hardest hue to hold, her early leaves a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf. So Eden sank to grief, so dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay. I think he's talking about the cycle of life, and he's, again, he's looking at nature, and he gets an awful lot from nature. There's another lovely one, and it's called mowing. There never was a sound beside the wood but one, and that was my long scythe whispering to the ground. What was it? It whispered. I knew not well myself. Perhaps it was something about the heat of the sun, something perhaps about the lack of sound, and that was why it whispered and did not speak. It was no dream of the gift of idle hours, or easy gold at the hand of fae or elf. Anything more than the truth would have seemed too weak to the earnest love that lay the swale and rose, not without heber-pointed spikes of flowers, pale orchises, and scared the bright green snake. The fact is, the sweetest dream that labour knows, my long scythe whispered and left the hay to make. I think that there's a lovely connection there again with nature, and I can almost hear the rhythm of a scythe and see the man, you know, bent, and the heat of the sun, and there's lovely images in that, and the hay just dropping silently with the swish. But so he certainly, and that's what I'm trying to say, I think that he connected people with nature, and he was immersed in that. But strangely enough, well, maybe not strangely, but he was struggling very hard to get his poetry, you know, noticed by publishers and that in America. And now, he had a few published here and there in magazines, but he wanted to kind of get more than that. And in, I think it was in 1911, and he was about 40 years old by then, and he hadn't one single collection of poems published. So there was this farm which he got from, you know, his father's side of his lineage, a small farm, and that passed to him. And he made a decision, and he decided to sell the farm and use the proceeds to make a start in London. And he moved the whole family there, and he thought that publishers would be more open and receptive to new talent. Now, obviously, that was something he half believed, because he just didn't. So he moved them all, and it can be said, I mean, when he made a gamble like that, it paid off, because within a year of his moving to the UK, his first poetry collection was published. And I think that was, if you can call it, like a turnaround for him, because then there was people from America, and they came across, and his name started to, you know, get bigger and bigger. And then, of course, they were talking about him in America. So the gamble was great, and it paid off for him. But it's strange that, you know, and it can happen sometimes in your own country, and you'd hear a lot of people saying that, even in Ireland, that they go away somewhere and they make it big. They make it big somewhere else, you know. But somehow or another, I was surprised. You know, surprised to hear. I thought he would have made it in America first. But anyway,
yeah. Isn't it the old saying about Jesus wasn't admired in his own place or whatever?
This is it, and I suppose that's the thing. That's the so you could say, like, in a few years, he had become a very popular poet. By the time he returned to America, which was only in, he came to the UK in 1912, and he went back to America in 1915. And his fame was so well established that now publishers were contacting him, which was a huge turnabout for him.
Yeah.
And I suppose there's kind of often things like that, you know, people say that, oh, he was rooted in nature, and of course there'll always be a critic, and they kind of at one stage there were always those few saying, no, he never dealt with world issues or industrialization of the day or anything like that. But you know, not everyone has to deal with everything. And this was where he felt, I think, at home, and this is where he felt, you know, he wanted to write about.
And does that make him more timeless than Bernadette as well, because he wasn't writing about the time, you know, he was writing about more universal themes?
It does, in a way, because there's always nature, and there's always people, and there's always people's interaction, good or bad, with nature. And, I mean, if he had written about the other stuff, but this, I think this is where his soul was. And I think that's why he, you know, he wanted to, like, he observed nature, and there's that poem, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. And I think I might read that one now, Joe.
Yes.
Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near. Between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep. But I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. And what I get from that poem, and look, somebody else might say something differently, but he's an observer of nature, and he is looking and admiring the woods and the snow and the trees, and he would have stayed longer. But miles to go, he has other stuff to do. You know, he has to get back to real life and, you know, the commitments of life, and he has to move on.
Yeah.
But I'm getting that he would love to have stayed there, just dreaming, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
Poets dream, you know, Joe. We're big daydreamers.
and it just reminds me that I was daydreaming in school, because often, you know, when you bring a poet, like, I, you know, that's how I got in touch with poetry, I suppose, was in my younger days, and then drifted away from it. But thanks to this program, I'm well back in touch with it again. But that just brings me back to my childhood. It's amazing. And actually, I can see the images that I created in my head for that poem. It's amazing.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Because it is, and I know we don't get we don't get the snow that they're getting parts of America and different things, you know, but we can still imagine kind of the when snow falls and, you know, it's on the branches of trees and, you know, a bird has walked, or there is that, there's a beauty in it. Mm. Now, some people, I know it can be dangerous in other ways, but look, the beauty of it when you look out at green fields and they're all white and everything, but I get that he would have stayed there for... It's like something he wanted to do. If he could ditch the commitments of life and stay dreaming in the woods and the horse and him, he's happy.
Mm.
So I think nature was definitely in his soul, in his psyche. But so he was, you know, he achieved a lot in his lifetime, and he had a lot of kind of hardships as well, outside of the poetry. In his personal life, I mean, he had 6 children, and 4 of them had predeceased him.
Really?
I think 2 died in infancy. And I think his son died he was a grown man, but he died tragically. And like, so that was 4 of his children. And that's tragedy. And his father died when he was only 11. So, you know, it wasn't just sailing through and just focusing on poetry. He had other stuff going on as well that he had to cope with.
Yeah.
And I think that his sister, he had only one sibling, a sister. And I think he had committed to a mental institution because, you know, her mental health wasn't great. So, I mean, he had a lot going on in his private life as well, which wasn't all rosy and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there is, if I could quickly read, there is a lovely little poem. It's called A Flower Boat.
Brilliant. And then we'll go to a break then. So, yeah.
But they're very much, you know, on focus.
Mm-hmm.
The Flower Boat. The fisherman swapping a yarn for a yarn under the hand of the village barber, and her in the angle of house and barn, his deep-sea dory has found a harbour. At anchor she rides the sunny sod, as full to the gunwale of flowers growing, as ever she turned her homeward cod from George's bank when winds were blowing. And I judge from that Elysian freight that all they ask is rougher weather, and dory and master will sail by fate to seek the happy isles together. And he's talking about, you know, he's in the bar, like someone in the barber shop, and they're having, you know, you can imagine it again. The imagery is very clear in his poetry. They're having, one is telling one story and the other is exchanging stories. But the fisherman, his boat is tied up and it's full of flowers now. In, you know, it's not on the water anymore. So you can imagine all the stories and everything. And I learned something, because I knew there was a fish called a dory.
Yes.
But I didn't know that there's a type of boat called a dory.
Yeah.
So I've learned that much.
Dory, isn't it? Isn't that the fish, I think? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a dory fish, but there's a boat as well. Apparently it has pointed ends and high sides or something. I didn't know there was a boat called a dory, but I don't know a lot about boats anyway, so.
Every day is a school day with Bernadette, I always say it. So Bernadette, stay with us. And I know you've a little kind of, I suppose, a nice surprise to come as well. So I'm looking forward to that. So we're going to go to a break, and we'll have more for Bernadette Nereida, speaking of poetry, and Robert Frost after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, we're speaking of poetry with Bernadette Nyerida, and the poet we're talking about this morning is Robert Frost. A lot of you would recognise the name and his poetry. I must commend you, Bernadette. You always do a great job, because you don't have a lot of time to get in, you know, their whole life story, but you do such a brilliant job here every month. But look, I'm like a child of Christmas here, because you told me I had a surprise, so I want to get to the surprise, because we've only a few minutes left. So what's the surprise, Bernadette?
Right. Thank you, Joe. Okay, you were the inspiration behind this poem.
Oh, God.
And that's why I've called it McGill's Mantra. And you were filling in for your colleague Jerry O'Sullivan on Kerry today.
Yeah.
And I was listening away, and you mentioned about dogs. Sorry, I better gather myself now. You mentioned about dogs and dogs, school dogs, and going to school and schools for dogs and all that. And yes. I was there, but some images came into my head, and I thought, you know, the only way I could get them out. So anyway, I'm going to read this now, called McGill's Mantra. At first, it was thought that the old dog just had fleas. But after potions and lotions and multiple sprays, things didn't improve. In fact, they got worse, driving Joe to distraction and even to curse. The leg of a table, a slipper or shoe. The dog thought that these were some things he could chew. Or he'd pee on the floor and think he was great. And he'd think nothing of swiping a bit of food from your plate. Joe's day-to-day life was now stress-filled and tough. Then one day he declared that enough is enough. This dog has to learn that a rule is a rule. Nothing for it, says Joe. I'll have to send him to school. With his head on his paws, Joe's dog lay on the ground, sizing up all the canines and owners around. Why was he here in this fenced-in green space? And why did his human have a scowl on his face? The dog suddenly sat up and started to whine. He just spotted a poodle that looked just divine. The paw nails were painted a bright shade of red, and little ribbons to match were pinned onto her head. With his tongue hanging out, he made a mad sprint, left Joe behind roaring, "Come back here, you melt!" But Joe's dog and the poodle escaped through the fence, both of them thinking, "Now this makes more sense." What they did after that is a mystery to me. But whatever it was, it caused an awful melee. The dog is still wondering what caused all the strife. And would humans ever learn that it's a dog's life?
Oh, you're brilliant, Bernadette. Oh, my God. You never know when you're doing a program what someone can make out of it. That was about, yeah, that was about the dogs, you know, that are misbehaving on beaches and different things, that they should go to school, like in Switzerland, I think it was. And Bernadette has made that beautiful, funny poem about it. Well, fair play to you, you're one talented woman.
So now, you inspired a poem. Joe, you see, when you're on the radio talking, you never know, and you're talking away, and the people listening, and you're creating images in our heads, and that's why I love the radio, because it gives images. We make our own images.
Whoa.
So anyway, that's your dog. That was his school days.
Brilliant. I can't wait to go home and tell Buddy all about this, my dog. Bernadette, you're a pleasure as always. Absolutely brilliant. Thanks a million for that. And we'll talk to you again next month. That's Bernadette Nyerida speaking of poetry. I want to listen back to that again. And if you do want to listen back to it, you can go to the Radio Kerry website, to our podcast section. That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. I'm trying to gather myself here. Francis is on the way. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. And I'll be back again next Saturday from 9 a.m. Until then, look after yourself and have a great Patrick's weekend.